This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 5th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The 11th annual Wakarusa Music Festival is June 5th through the 8th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. Over 150 acts will perform, including the String Cheese Incident, Michael Franti and Spearhead, and STS9. A non-perishable food drive, meditation classes, and more will be offered during this four-day festival. Tickets and information available at wakarusa.com.
The 6th annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival completes its 2014 season this evening in the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges. Beginning at 7:30 p.m., the U of A music faculty and guest artists will perform The Quality of Luminescence with the String Quartet by Maurice Ravel and quintets for clarinet and strings by Cockerham and Brahms. Reservations are required for tonight's free event. FulbrightSummerMusic.uark.edu for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, the 2014 Cancer Challenge hopes to add to the $10 million raised with the event in the past 20 years. The three-day event this year encompasses a variety of locations and activities, including golfing, running, trap shooting, and wrapping up with the more traditional gala.
Plus, uncovering stories at Oak Cemetery. And if you're unsure of which stages to make it to during this weekend's Wakarusa Music Festival, Becca Martin Brown offers some suggestions.
First, a new study shows that Arkansas's two centers for gambling and racing, Oaklawn Park in Hot Springs and Southlawn Park in West Memphis, had a big contribution to the Arkansas economy in 2012. Arkansas business reporter Lance Turner says the two tracks commissioned the study by Backstar Consulting Group of Chicago.
What the study says is that basically in 2012, these two parks, Oaklawn, the Thoroughbred Racing Park, and Southland, the Greyhound Racing Park, amounted to about a $900 million economic impact for the state. And the study, to reach that figure, measured a lot of different kinds of spending, a lot of it linked to racing and gambling, taxes paid, tourism, and short-term construction. The study also looked at direct effects like ticket sales, but it also looked at indirect impacts like purchases by the venue from other businesses, induced effects like income spent by employees of both racetracks, and the venue's support of secondary businesses.
Turner says the report comes as the two entities are undertaking major renovation efforts that will result in increased space on the electronic gaming floors at each track.
A group pushing for a higher minimum wage in Arkansas is moving full steam ahead with its signature gathering efforts. The group Give Arkansas a Raise Now is circulating petitions throughout the state in order to get an initiative put on the November ballot that would let voters decide whether to raise the state's minimum wage from $6.25 an hour to $8.50 an hour. Stephen Copley, chairman of the Give Arkansas a Raise Now coalition, says that the group is confident it will have enough signatures to get the measure on the ballot.
We're certainly close to high 60,000, right around 70,000, but we're still having to collect signatures because you've got to certainly build a buffer zone in there for any that might. Somebody signed twice or somebody signed on a sheet that was in the wrong county and those sort of things. So to ensure the validity rates where we need it to get to the 62,500, we're still pushing hard.
Although the initiative isn't guaranteed to be on the ballot until the Secretary of State's office certifies all the petition signatures, Copley says once that happens, the next step is to further spread the message of the measure.
We'll begin a campaign. And right now, just kind of some of the basic thoughts about it is we'll try to get the word out to folks. And again, the message is simple, that folks who are on the state minimum wage are people that are working hard every day. They play by the rules. They share the American dream. But at the end of the day, they can't make the budget balance in their lives. And so we want to get that word out to people in as many different ways as we can do that, because it does resonate with people. They either have a family member or next-door neighbor or somebody at church or who are experiencing that, and they know that they need to be paid more.
Petitions for other ballot initiatives are circulating throughout the state, include initiatives regarding medical marijuana and making alcohol sales legal in all of the state's counties.
Fayetteville Public Schools is providing free lunches this summer to the city's youth. Morgan Stout, the school district's food services director, says Holt Middle School will be the district site for the USDA Seamless Summer Program, providing lunches to young people at no charge.
It's open to all children up to the age of 18. We will be serving lunch and an afternoon snack. This would run Monday through Friday, beginning on June 11th through August 1st. Lunch is served from 11 to 1, and the afternoon snack is from 2 to 3.
As for why the district provides the program, Stout says the reason is simple.
It's been a good program for us to provide meals to the kids of our district over the summer months for those who may be in need of, you know, meals when school's not in session.
The Seamless Summer Program is conducted by the USDA, and the meals cost nothing for the school district.
With about 4,500 Walmart associates staying on the University of Arkansas campus this week, and with about 14,000 shareholders and associates expected to be on campus for the annual shareholders convention, quite a bit of food will be prepared for all the visitors. And one campus group is working to make sure that unused food won't go to waste. The student organization Razorback Food Recovery is partnering with Chartwell's Campus Dining and Tyson Foods to give that unused food to local agencies like the Salvation Army and Life Source International. Tyson is providing the group with a freezer truck for cold storage, and Chartwell staff members are tasked with making sure safe food handling procedures are used. Razorback Food Recovery is a student volunteer program that started in February, and so far, the group has recovered and distributed more than 2,000 pounds of unused food from campus dining facilities.
This weekend, Fort Smith drivers should be advised of a street closure. Between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday, Dallas Street will be closed between 98th and 106th Streets. According to the city, the closure is associated with drainage improvements. Detours will be marked.
And starting next week in Fayetteville, a portion of Maple Street will be closed as crews begin installing a water main and repairing a sewer main. Both lanes of the street will be closed weekdays between 6:30 a.m. and 4 p.m., though the street will be reopened during the weekends. The closure will be between Leverett and Lindell Avenues, and the work is expected to last through June 27th.
Partly cloudy tonight, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Low will be in the upper 60s in northwest Arkansas, 40% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley, a low of 72. Cloudy tomorrow, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s in northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow for the River Valley, partly sunny, 50-50 chance of rain, highs in the mid-80s. And for Friday night, mostly cloudy chance of rain, lows from the mid-60s to lower 70s.
This is Ozarks at Large. Saturday night, country star Blake Shelton will become the first headliner to perform at the Arkansas Music Pavilion's new home in Rogers. Walmart is presenting the sold-out grand opening community concert. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended a sneak preview of the new venue and has this report.
Welcome to the very first preview with actually our clothes on. We have tents, we have bathrooms, we have a stage. I know some of you were here for our topping off ceremony, and we were fighting that wind on the stage, but look at us now, and we are just so thrilled.
Yesterday afternoon, Peter Lane, president and CEO of the Walton Arts Center, greeted a group of sponsors and members of the media who gathered at the Walmart Amp's new permanent home in Rogers. After the Walton Arts Center purchased the Amp in February of 2011, the venue moved from its original location at the Northwest Arkansas Mall to the Washington County Fairgrounds. The Amp is now in its permanent location along I-49 just west of Pinnacle Hills Promenade. Having owned the Amp for a few years now, Lane said they discovered what an economic opportunity the Amp is for the community and the region. He said 35% of the AMP audience comes from outside of Benton and Washington counties, so it's likely these concert goers stay at hotels and eat at restaurants in the region. The AMP will also benefit the community by providing another venue that nonprofit organizations, for example, can use to host their events. Lane said an outdoor amphitheater is an important amenity for local residents.
You know, in 2012, the Walton Family Foundation, which conducts lots of surveys, did one that we really grabbed onto, and it was a survey about what is missing in our community. And it was a survey of the average guy, a lot of people in this community from all walks of life. And at the top of the list, above ballparks, above trails, above restaurants, above opera companies, was an outdoor music pavilion. We really like that statistic because it really said to us, this is what the community was asking.
While guests were given a tour of the new facility, crew members worked on finishing some last-minute details. The towering black stage that sits in the middle of the amphitheater was filled with brown boxes containing 55-inch flat-screen televisions. A handful of workers assembled the flat screens into one large screen, which hung on the west side of the stage. General manager and previous AMP owner Brian Crown said there will be two screens on either side of the stage that measure 14 feet wide by 25 feet tall.
Those are all Samsung TVs. Samsung came on as a sponsor with us, and we're actually building these big video walls. Each one is made up of 36 individual TV panels.
Well, how did that partnership come about?
Well, it came about because I was actually visiting with Samsung about a band I work with, and then they found out what all I did with this, and they started the conversation about possibly having them come on as a partner, and we're very excited to have them. It's amazing, amazing company.
To the naked eye, the stage looks considerably larger than it did in its previous incarnations. But exactly how big is it?
Oh, good Lord, it's huge. It's about 90 feet across the front when you include the video bays. From the deck to the grid is 46 feet tall. The main grid's designed to fly up to 85,000 pounds of equipment. We can do another 10,000 pounds each in the video bays. So we designed the stage to basically handle any tour that might be on the road.
The stage, which has ramp and stair access, has a loading dock that can accommodate up to four semi-trucks. Musicians can access the stage by walking out from their dressing rooms, which are located in a building directly to the east of the stage, and through an entrance at the back of the stage. While they do have to walk outside, the musician's path is completely covered thanks to a white awning. Crown estimated the new venue will allow them to accommodate 90% of acts touring on the road. However, he was quick to note the AMP attracted plenty of talented musicians in the past.
You know, but I always used to tell folks, I said, come inside my fence and you'll forget you're on a mall parking lot. And we created a great experience there. And you know, what's cool is the seed that was planted, you know, 10 years ago by Dan White, the primary owner. And then, you know, when I bought it in 08, we continued to grow it and tried to keep people excited about it. And then, you know, fortunate to have the Walton Arts Center have the interest to purchase from me with all the goal that we're also working together to grow it into this. So it's real exciting for the region.
The mall parking lot may no longer be part of the venue, but its signature white tent is, although this is a new cover with some unique features.
It's an amazing, this is the company called Bird Air made this. They actually made the roof over the Denver airport. So this is load-bearing. It's kind of a Kevlar structure. It all drains back into the poles, but doesn't drain out. It's supposed to be guaranteed for 25 years and rated for up to 90 to 100 mile an hour winds. So it's the upkeep on it is keep the drains clean and we should be okay.
3,300 seats are located underneath the tent, and about the first 12 rows are located in what's called the Kellogg's Bowl. The folding chairs in these front rows can be removed if musicians want a standing crowd near the stage or if they have a thrust stage. There is lawn seating on a grassy hill located opposite the stage, but concert goers will no longer be able to bring their chairs. This will keep patrons from interfering with the sightlines of other guests. With lawn seating, General Manager Brian Crown estimated the venue can accommodate more than 7,000 people. Crown limited capacity to 6,000 for Saturday's concert because he said technically it's their soft opening and a client event with Walmart presenting the community concert. Crown didn't want to overwhelm the venue and region right away because he said it's best to grow into your maximum capabilities. When the AMP opens to the public Saturday night, Crown expects patrons will be pleased with the new venue.
They're going to go, holy cow, this place is huge. Wow, it's beautiful. Oh my God. There's not really a bad seat in the house. Wow, that stage is amazing. I mean, I really think it's going to be genuine excitement.
More information about the AMP and its 2014 season are available at arkansasmusicpavilion.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The 14th annual Wakarusa Music Festival begins today on Mulberry Mountain. But in case you can't make it until the weekend or at all, we have a preview. The passenger pillbox, GI Bill, now the IV drip stock. Just cross out my eyes, cause I can't take this life anymore. Whoa. world will spin on without me, so... Caroline Rowe stops by the Furman Garner Performance Studio for a song before her set this evening. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large. Every
time I'm Robin Young. Critics are raving about John Fulbright's new CD, but why so dark?
I try to look at life as realistically as I can, and, you know, it's not always happy.
You're smiling now.
I'm smiling now. That's what I mean. I mean, when I smiled when I wrote the song.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. You tell me what's so
bad about Here and Now, today at 1 on KUAF.
Christina, what if I told you in the next few weeks you could run, play tennis, play golf, dance, eat salsa, have color thrown on you, drink specially created beverages, listen to Ultra Suede, ride your bike all over Fort Smith, drink mojitos, go to a barn dance, drink wine, look at the art at 21C in downtown Bentonville, and have a picnic with your teddy bear, and everything you do on that list helps raise money for a good cause.
Sounds like I have a very busy June ahead of me.
Yes, well, it is packed with events connected to area nonprofits, including the 21st Cancer Challenge that takes place in Northwest Arkansas this month. I'll talk to the Cancer Challenge's executive director, Aaron Rongers, in just a moment.
Before that, here are just some of the other events this month. Tomorrow, Northwest Arkansas Mercy Family YMCA is hosting Taste of Summer at the Coca-Cola Building on 52nd Street in Rogers. Money raised benefits the Strong Kids campaign. And Saturday, the annual Color Dash takes place at Pinnacle Hills Promenade, a 5K that you end up doused in all kinds of colors. Information for both events can be found at ymcanwa.org.
Saturday, the second Teddy Bear Picnic is at Gully Park in Fayetteville from 4:30 until 6:30 p.m. A box lunch is $10 for adults. The picnic benefits Family Network. You can learn more at familynetworkknwa.com.
And also Saturday, the Climb for Comfort and Care organization will host Hike for Hospice at Devil's Den State Park. The cost is $25 and proceeds are directed towards Circle of Life Hospice. There are 3, 4, and 5 mile hikes you can take between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. Saturday. More information at climbforcomfortandcare.org.
Saturday night at 21C Hotel in Bentonville, the Ozark Natural Science Center hosts their annual fundraiser, Call of the Wild. Food and beverages are being created specifically for the event. They'll be available there. There will also be music for kids, and in a separate room, music and dancing for adults. ONSC.org for more information.
The Walton Arts Center's annual Art of Wine returns June 12th through the 14th. The three-day affair helps fund Walton Arts Center programs, including their educational programs. Call 443-5600 for more.
On the 14th, the Tour de Fun rolls through downtown Rogers to raise money for Teen Action. There are bike rides of 150 and 10 kilometers. There's also a 5K walk and run. You can find out more at teenaction.org.
Horse for Healing will bring back their barn dance on the 14th in Bentonville. The organization matches horses with children with special needs. Learn more at horsesforhealingnwa.org.
The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks has the rum, lime juice, and mint ready for one of their biggest events of the year, Moonflowers and Mojitos. This summer staple, technically it's a late spring staple, but summer staple sounds better, is Tuesday the 17th at Botanical Garden of the Ozarks from 5:30 until 8:30. Reservations strongly encouraged for this event. You can make those at bgozarks.org.
Thursday the 19th, the Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas will be at the Town Center in downtown Fayetteville for their annual Spark of Hope dinner. The reception begins at 6 that night, the program at 7. More at spsfnwa.org.
And the very next night at the Town Center, that's Thursday the 20th, I'm honored to be the MC for the 12th annual Summer Salsa that benefits Children's House. Ultra Suede will play the music. Salsa and summer food will be on hand. Tickets $75 and may be reserved at childrenshousenwa.org.
Saturday the 21st, the True Grit Ride begins at Ben Garin Park in Fort Smith at 7 a.m. Riders can choose from rides between 10 and 100 miles. Whew. Money raised is for Community Services Clearinghouse. Details at truegritride.com.
I think I know which one I would choose.
Yeah.
I'd start at the 10 and go
too.
From there.
Me too.
But wait, there's more. The 21st Cancer Challenge is June 19th, 20th, and 21st in Bentonville and Bella Vista and other places. The key word about this weekend's fundraiser is multi. There are multi events, golf tournament, tennis tournament, a trap shoot tournament, a 10K run, and there is the Summer Nights Gala at Horton Farms in Gravett Friday night, the 20th. The events take place in multiple cities, not just Gravett, but also Bella Vista and Bentonville. And the money raised goes toward multiple area agencies and their services. This morning, Aaron Rogers, the executive director of Cancer Challenge, met me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy news studio, and I asked her how this organization pulls off this massive weekend.
We do it with a whole lot of volunteers who just really just come out of the woodwork and help us put this on. So we have three staff in the office, and there is absolutely no way that we could pull this all off by ourselves. So this event has been going on for 20 years. It's been getting bigger and better every year, and we just have more hands on deck to help us pull it off. And, you know, it's just people pouring their heart and soul in this. So
you mentioned the 20 years. It started in 93, I believe.
93, so this will be our 21st.
Tens of millions of dollars raised in that time, right?
$10 million. $10 million have been raised in that, you know, in 20 years of doing the event. We've served 300,000 people here in Northwest Arkansas with those funds.
And the guess this year, the estimate is hundreds of thousands will be raised?
We hope to raise $700,000.
Wow.
And so we hope that's a conservative estimate. But, you know, of that money, we put that right back into the community. So we make grants to this year. It'll be seven different, you know, different organizations that serve people here locally. And I think that's really key, is that all the money stays here in Benton and Washington counties to serve people.
And we're talking from programs that help children all the way to the end of life.
Everything. So we have programs that, you know, help prevent cancer. So we are funding screening programs that the community clinic does and Hope Cancer Resources. And then we help people through the journey of cancer. So we're helping people with that financial burden that they have, helping people have access to better treatment. And then even beyond that, we are helping people survive. You know, all that comes to do with, okay, well, I beat this disease, now what? So, you know, we're actually funding an exercise program for people at the Mercy Family YMCA, and they can come out and just, you know, get their life back physically. So we also fund Circle of Life Hospice. You know, we do bereavement care, and we do, you know, we help them with charity care for cancer patients for end of life. So it, you know, it really is the whole spectrum: prevention, treatment, survivorship.
Wow.
So
I mentioned the multi-platforms because there is tennis, there is a golf tournament, I believe there's a run.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I went to Bella Vista and talked to the guys who were in charge of the trap shoot.
Yep.
It's
yep.
All there.
That's all going on. And then, you know, we have our gala on Friday night,
our
summer nights gala in Gravett. So, yeah, I mean, it is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday all day. I mean, things are going on multiple places. And so, you know, I mean, at any given time on Friday, you've got all of those things happening at one time. So.
And that's 19th, 20th, 21st.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? Since you're in different towns with different events, Aaron, what are you doing those 3 days?
Well, since this is the first year that I've been with the Cancer Challenge, I don't know yet. I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do.
That's a smart executive director right there.
I'm just going to say, you tell me where to be. You know, but you know, we're doing that behind-the-scenes work right now in the office, so we're pulling everything together. So right now, you know, we're getting hundreds of golf participants' names, and we're trying to put them all on teams and in, you know, in different flights and doing all that. You know, we provide that information to our volunteers, and they really make it happen the day of the event. So, you know, I think my job and our staff, it's to put out fires as they come up, and you know, hopefully there won't be many of them, but if there are, you know, that's what we're there for. And, you know, and also to get out there and just to network and to get out to the events and say thank you. Because, again, there is no way that the three of us could raise, you know, close to $700,000 this year and pull off these events without these hundreds of volunteers helping us. So a big part of our job is to get out there and, you know, help support them and tell them thank you. Because, I mean, there's just no way we could do it ourselves.
We're 2 weeks out. Can people still get into the tournaments, the tennis tournament or the golf tournament?
You know, we're getting right to the wire. So, you know, we still have gala tickets available.
Okay.
We may have some individual, you know, participants spots left in the tournaments. Definitely, you know, people can sign up for the run and for tennis. You know, but our corporate sponsorships is, you know, we kind of raise that money all year long. And we've got most of that set. So if people hurry up and, you know, kind of get in, they can. So.
Now, I know your concentration right now is on this 3-day weekend in a couple of weeks, but I want to ask you about something else that Cancer Challenge does, and that's the teen Challenge, mm-hmm. which there are volleyball mm-hmm. games or football games.
Yeah.
And that's been going on for a few years.
We've been doing that for a few years. And then that takes place throughout the school year. So we're hoping to really, we've had a bunch of transition this year with the Cancer Challenge. And so we're hoping to get back on that this coming school year. And that's a neat thing because it gets the kids out there raising money. I think everybody has known somebody who's had cancer or experienced this. And so And everybody can help in some way. And so it's a really neat thing for them to be able to get out there, kind of get some fundraising practice. And I mean, they really do contribute, and they have fun doing it. So, so we're looking forward to moving back that direction soon.
And that's raised significant money over the last few years.
It has been. So, generally our main source of revenue is this event. I mean, this event is everything. It carries us through the year. It allows us to grant our monies out to our funding partners, but any extra money we get is just more money we can give away. And to me, sitting where I am in this position, that is why we do this, is to give money away. And the more money we can give, the more our partners can do with it to help people.
I don't want to put you in the unemployment line, but would the ultimate goal be that Cancer Challenge doesn't have to exist?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Personally, I fought cancer 17 years ago, and every day I think about it. And, my husband's been battling his own battle for 12 years. And it is a disease that it is not only, physically devastating, but, emotionally, mentally, financially. I mean, there is so much that comes with that you carry with you, not only, when you're in that position, but years down the road. And so, if we can just wipe that out, we would. I just can't even imagine that day. And that's obviously just the ultimate goal with what we're doing. And so, what little piece we can do here in Northwest Arkansas to help our friends and neighbors is moving us that direction. So, absolutely, I would take unemployment any day if that could be the case.
And if people want to learn more, where can they go?
They can go to www.cancerchallenge.com, find us on Facebook, and give us a call at the office.
Thank you, Erin.
Thank you.
Erin is the executive director of Cancer Challenge. The 21st Cancer Challenge is June 19th through the 21st. You can find out much more at cancerchallenge.com. It is Thursday, June 5th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
And with us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The Christina Karnatz rolls happily off your tongue.
Well, we've decided it's the consonants.
Ah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It seems to have come easily.
Yeah.
I still don't know who I am all the time. Oh, wait, that could be because I'm getting old. Anyway, Kevin Kinder, who is the music editor for What's Up.
And also has a couple of consonants for initials.
Mm. Yes,
there
he does.
Go. Kyle Callums, Kevin Kinder.
Huh.
Yeah.
Is, of course, on his way to Wakarusa.
Yes. He gives us such great coverage.
But he has left us some insider tips about the bands you need to see.
Okay.
So if you're going out there this weekend, this is actually Festival Director Brett Bosimon's tips for who to see.
Okay.
Rainwolf.
I will plead complete ignorance to Rainwolf.
Me too.
It's a blues-infused garage rock style in the vein of Jack White.
I consider me interested.
They've gotten notice from people like Rolling Stone, and he's been playing a bunch of festivals.
Okay.
St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Gets big endorsements from the people I know who've seen and heard them.
Soul Band from Alabama, and they're playing a lot of festivals. They're playing Beale Street, they're playing Bonnaroo, they're playing festivals in Europe.
I missed them at Jazz Fest by one day.
Aww.
I know.
DJ Snake. Means nothing to me.
Know.
He's French.
Okay.
He combines hip-hop and electronica, and he has worked with people like Lady Gaga.
Okay.
Got a Grammy nomination for his production work on her album, Born This Way. J. Roddy Walston and The Business.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin describes them as straight-ahead rock from Tennessee, and they have a new album called Essential Tremors. and have gotten single play on Modern Rock Radio for a song called Heavy Bells.
Okay.
Walk Off the Earth, a Canadian band best known for lo-fi covers of popular songs.
Yep, they're fun.
And Robert DeLong, who has an indie rock background and now does electronic music production.
And the thing to take away here from a festival is you may see the 150 names and know a few of them, but you're going to run across someone
that you like.
Exactly.
I think Brett put it that your 15 new favorite bands will be somewhere at Wakarusa.
Yes, so probably so.
You can find out more at wakarusa.com or follow Kevin because on Twitter and on his music page and everywhere else, because he'll be there all weekend telling you what's going on.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On the Friday edition of the show, I will feature more music you'll be able to hear at the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series from the Yellow Jackets and the Sons of Brazil. We'll also hear from Brian Bromberg and Clifton Anderson and much more, so tune in this Friday night at 10 o'clock for Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. A plot of land on Fayetteville's southern side remains divided by race. On one side, the Fayetteville National Cemetery's glistening white headstones form even lines across bright green grass. On the other side, crumbling rocks for tombstones, if a grave has one at all. Many are covered with leaves and long forgotten. This is Oak Cemetery, an African-American cemetery. Established in 1867, Oak Cemetery was the only location African Americans could be buried, and is the subject of the documentary film Oak Cemetery, A Forgotten Place, a production by University of Arkansas graduate students Tiffany King and John Cooper. Though produced as a school project, the film has gained local attention, even receiving the Mayor's Award for Outstanding Service in Historic Preservation. King, a former broadcast journalist, and Cooper, who has spent his career behind a camera for a different purpose, came together to tell this historical story. The two stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss the film and the idea behind it.
A friend of mine who's also a journalist, she told me about Lem McPherson, who was an African-American police officer back in the 1920s. And there was no real record of his story. And she told me about that and told me that his grave was unmarked in the African-American cemetery here in town. I didn't know that there was an African-American cemetery here in town. And I've been here for about 10, 12 years. So this just really struck me as interesting, and I started doing the research and found a local historian, Jerry Hogan. He had done a lot of the research to find out the backstory about this gentleman who was killed in the line of duty. And to me, that sounded like a great news story. I could make a story that's about 2 minutes long on that subject, but we needed something that was a lot longer. So we just kind of started digging around and just following leads and really trying to find people here who have lived here forever, have lived in the African American community for decades, and just try to find out what their story is. And it seems like a story that hasn't really been told. And so we thought that this would be a great piece for our community.
And this African-American cemetery, Oak Cemetery, mm-hmm. it's in what is it in the traditionally called the Tin Cup area?
No, it's not, actually. Okay. It's kind of adjacent to the Tin Cup area. It is located right behind the National Cemetery here in Fayetteville. And that's another thing that we thought was really interesting, because the National Cemetery, it's so beautiful and well-kept and a landmark here. And the two cemeteries share a fence. And if you just look over the fence, you see this cemetery that has been, you know, sort of fallen in a little disrepair. And so just that juxtaposition was really interesting.
So you see this, the National Cemetery, with its all-white headstones and beautifully kempt, and then, yes, there's something where everything's falling over and falling apart and
the
flowers.
The visual was quite striking that we had to take. One thing that we used in the visual aspects was kind of compare the two to show that there's this really kept, clean lawn compared to this other cemetery, to show that there is a big difference between the two, that it's, if you don't know it's there, you'll drive right past it.
And reaching out to the African-American community, did you find some hesitation to want to talk about the cemetery?
We found a little bit of hesitation, but once they found out that we were trying to tell their story, that they were very upfront in providing a lot of the information and photos to add to the visuals, and all of our people that we interviewed were very happy to be on camera and to allow us to use their story for our class. It was very, very kind of them to let us into their lives for a few months to help us out with that project.
And it was very emotional, too, because these, especially some of the older women that we interviewed in this piece, I mean, they've lived through so much with segregation. And just to be able to collect those stories before it's too late, because these ladies are in their 80s. And so to be able to gather those stories and really share them with everybody, it's invaluable, I think.
Completely off subject, but in interviewing, you know, World War II veterans, because there's so few remaining.
And, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you mentioned Lem McPherson. He died well after the African American Cemetery was formed, but he's still he kind of was the guy that led you into this story. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about him. I mean, and he doesn't have a headstone, right? Or didn't?
He didn't have a headstone. Okay. Like I said, J.B. Hogan, he's a local historian. He was just sort of going through newspaper articles just to try and find a subject to kind of research. And he found city council minutes from back when Lem McPherson was killed, and it acknowledged that there was an African-American police officer on the payroll. And so he took that information and really tried to dig and find out what the story was with it, and found out. And the story with Lem McPherson is he was hired by Fayetteville Police to patrol the black section of town, and that's really where he had his jurisdiction. He got into a fight with another man and was gunned down in the Tin Cup area. And so he was killed in the line of duty. He was buried in the cemetery with probably a small marker, but nothing really descriptive. And so that story had fallen through the cracks. And just the fact that there was no place really marking where he finally was buried, nobody really, you know, talked about it. So JB did a bunch of research and reached out to people in the African-American community and figured out kind of where this where Lem McPherson's grave was. And so the police department then commissioned a headstone for Lem McPherson, since he was an officer who was killed in the line of duty. And so there's a beautiful headstone now that sits in that spot in the cemetery.
But it wasn't until JB started to do his research and really...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine that there are so many other people that are buried there whose stories have fallen through the cracks. Did you uncover anything else?
Well, one of the most emotional points in filming and in the film itself was we were taking one of the ladies who was pretty instrumental in finding a lot of the stories, because she knew a lot of people. Her name is Betty Davis. And it was just one day we brought her out to the cemetery. We actually picked her up and drove her out to the cemetery, since she doesn't drive that much. And Tiffany and her were just walking around the cemetery, just listening to her stories of everybody that we came across. She knew every other headstone that we passed, she knew that person. And we were about to leave, and we just said, well, let's just look at this one last headstone. It's one of the larger ones in an older section of the cemetery, and it finds out that it's her great-grandfather, right, mm-hmm. who was a slave and who came to Fayetteville. And just Tiffany could speak more to just how Betty reacted to that, finding that, and after seeing it for... I don't know, it's been decades since she's been there and seen that headstone.
She thought everything was gone. She had been to the cemetery but couldn't find the headstone. And we found out later that headstone had actually been knocked over and covered by a bunch of brush. And so only recently was it uncovered and then placed back in the upright position. So when we stumbled upon that and I started reading the headstone off to her, she immediately broke down and started crying, because she thought that everything was gone. It was her great-grandfather who started their family here in Fayetteville. So it was a really emotional moment, and a great moment for her, too.
Well, you mentioned sort of that this tombstone had just fallen over and had been covered with brush. Since JB and yourselves have started this, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't call it really a movement, but you're just, you know, you're delving into this long-forgotten cemetery. Has there been some reaction in the community to sort of pick it up and take care of it?
It seems like it. We had a showing of our film at the Yvonne Richardson Center in February with Compassion Fayetteville, and a lot of city leaders and county leaders were there. And so I think that they now know more about the cemetery and are trying to get things kind of together to see if they can get some funding for the cemetery. I know people have spoken about trying to get it on the Register of Historic Places, things like that, so they can really take care of the cemetery, because it really is an important piece of our community.
Is it still active?
Yes. There are. It's shrinking, though. There are fewer than 100 plots available in the cemetery right now. And it's landlocked, too. So if they need to expand, I don't know where they would.
Well, kind of switching gears to less of the story of the cemetery and more the story of the film. I know, just working on stories here, I mean, we sort of do long form. You know, a story can be 8 minutes, and that's long for a lot of news organizations. But to get down to that 8-minute story, I'll often have 2.5 hours of audio. You know, so I can only imagine that for your almost 20-minute long film, how much, you know, video footage you had. So what was that process like?
Well, one of the biggest challenges we found out when we were going to do a documentary about a cemetery was, how do we make that visually interesting? Because it's just rows of this old cemetery, and how do you kind of turn that into a visual piece? And we turned historical documents documents and photos from the community. The Fayetteville police helped us out with a lot of kind of the newspaper clippings from the era of Lem McPherson and an era of Prohibition to allow us to kind of tell that side of the story. And even at one point, to tell Lem McPherson stories, we turned to recreation. So we, with the help of the Fayetteville police, we recreated the story of kind of in silent film, sepia-toned type of recreation, redid the whole shootout scene between him and the other gentleman in the thing. And the Fayetteville archives also had kind of the deeds of when the story was sold, or not the story, but the cemetery was sold by a benefactor in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. So
there was a lot of research that went on in this and trying to gather all those historic documents. And then for our interviews, too, when I worked at a television station and I was on a deadline every single day, the interviews had to be really sweet and to the point. But with this, you could really get a chance to know somebody. But we talked for several hours with those folks, and then we had to go through, log everything, and then find those sound bites, those things that we really wanted to use for the film. So it was a lot of work. It was really rewarding, but it did take a long time to sort of sift through all of the stuff we were collecting and let that story sort of reveal itself.
I wish I had that sort of time and flexibility. I mean, it is a lot of work, yeah, for sure. But often it's working on a big-time deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, many documentary films have a narrator. How important is – how do you choose a narrator, and are you listening to their voice? How did you pick?
I think, first of all, with a narrator, we found out that it can't just be somebody who can read. It has to be somebody who can tell a story. And it has to be somebody that the audience connects with, somebody who's appropriate for sharing the story, and somebody that's coachable. Because it does take a long time in the audio booth to get, you know, your narrator to really get it right. And so, as I was working on my master's degree, I was also the grad assistant for the broadcast department, and so I was teaching some classes, and one of my students, he's wonderful, Joseph Holloway, he works at KNWA now. Congrats to him. Anyway, he was one of my students. He's very involved, and I knew that he had the talent because he did want to be a broadcaster, and so that's really how we chose.
I know, it's hard to, I know, I mean, just in my job, I keep comparing, but it's hard to just read something.
Yes.
And not sound like you're reading something.
It's tough.
Yeah, for sure.
We really spent the first like hour in the audio booth with him, just kind of getting the tone of the piece kind of worked out. It took us a while to get there, but through getting what we wanted and coaching Joseph around to what we needed, he was, once we got it, it went very well, but it was just a matter of getting the right tone in his voice and the right way we wanted the story to be told, and then doing take after take after take of each one of those lines, actually in different inflections, to based on what the script called for and what was happening. Mm-hmm. So if we were telling a real kind of more intense part of Lynn McPherson's story, he would have a more kind of intense thing, or if it was more emotional, he'd kind of dial him back a little bit and tell a more emotional story at the time.
And John's a great coach. He's a great coach. And I think we made a really good partnership because I was used to doing the research and gathering the story and writing the story. John, his forte is really, you know, visual and editing. I mean, he's a genius when it comes to editing. So it was really, really great to be able to work together in that way. It was kind of like yin and yang to make the product, you know, as polished as we could.
Mm-hmm. Well, the documentary on Oak Cemetery, I mean, it was a graduate school project, but it's been recognized in the community and it's been featured in community events. What is that like to get recognition for something, you know, I mean, other than just an A from your teacher?
It's amazing, really, and not really just the recognition. We did start this as a project, and it was sort of like, we have to get this finished. We want to make a good grade. But when we got into it, we realized it was something so much bigger than that. And with the recognition, more people are aware of the story, and we're exposing more people to the cemetery. And so that is our ultimate goal. And we don't want to pat ourselves on the back. It's not us. It's the community shining a spotlight on something that really is important. And so the more people who get exposed to this and who are able to see it, just, I mean, it's just wonderful.
It's a pretty great feeling to have a somewhat of an impact on your community. And that's kind of what one of our goals at the end were, just to tell a story that not a lot of people knew about and hopefully make at least a small difference in the community in which we work and live.
Tiffany King and John Cooper are graduate students in the documentary film track of the Journalism Master's Program at the University of Arkansas. They produced the film Oak Cemetery, A Forgotten Place. For more information on the film, visit oakcemetery.weebly.com. That's Weebly. This is Ozarks at Large.
Coming up on Ask Me Another, we take the show to St. Paul and play a game called City of Twins.
The Winklevoss twins also competed in the 2008 Summer Olympics in what event?
Synchronized luge.
Join me, Ophir Eisberg, and our VIP, author of Orange is the New Black, Piper Kerman, on NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia.
Listen to Ask Me Another, Saturdays at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
Today, dozens of musicians are performing on Mulberry Mountain as part of the Wakarusa Music Festival, including Caroline Rose. Yesterday, Caroline and her bandmates Jer Coons and Pat Melvin stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio en route to the festival. During their visit, they played this song called Roll On.
One, two, one, two, three. America's dreamer, copyright issue 99. Further on down this hole, I guess it's time for me to roll on. Passing the pill box, GI Bill, now the IV drip. tear my eyes, cause I can't take this life anymore. The world will spin on without me, so I guess it's time for me to roll.
That was Caroline Rose inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The trio performs at 7:45 tonight on the Backwood Stage at Wakarusa. We'll have more from our visit with the band on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Still on the Hill will perform songs from Once a River, story songs about Beaver Lake watershed, June 20th at 7 p.m. at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. Still on the Hill will give away 100 CDs at this free community performance on a first-come, first-served basis. More information is available at stillonthehill.com.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents A Taste for Modernism, featuring more than 60 works of art by European masters of modernism from the Museum of Modern Art in New York, Picasso, Matisse, Cezanne, and more on exhibit until July 7th. More information at crystalbridges.org.
The KUAF Summer Jazz Series opens its 16th season with the jazz fusion group The Yellow Jackets, June 21st at 8 p.m. at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. The Grammy Award-winning Yellow Jackets will present their high-energy mix of jazz, funk, and blues. The Summer Jazz Series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. A link to tickets available online at our website, KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Wallula.
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 I don't even want to ask how to spell that.
Well, I can tell you. W-A-T-A-L-U-L-A. Wallula.
Okay. Where is it?
Okay. So Wallula, if as the crow flies, is about 25 miles northeast of Felkertown.
I don't know where that is either, but all right.
just take if you're on 23, the pig trail, just take, I think it's a left on Wallula Road,
okay,
and wind around and you'll end up in Wallula.
Well, that makes sense.
It's not that far from Wakarusa.
Okay.
In fact, it hit me, there should be some sort of fundraiser that is a run or a bicycle ride called From Wallula to Wakarusa.
I'll tell them for next year.
Okay.
All right.
I'm an idea guy.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And we'll end today's show with some music that's previewing a festival that will happen later this summer here in Fayetteville. Earlier this week, the Fayetteville Roots Festival announced some additions to this year's lineup. Birds of Chicago will perform Sunday evening at George's and at a special, yet-to-be-announced event, Labor Day at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. So this is Birds of Chicago song, Flying Dreams. And according to the event's website, the full schedule and lineup will be released tomorrow at their website, FayettevilleRoots.com.
Cool.
All right.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
Thanks so much for listening. How you cry.